shore?
Yes, it did. It came right across, right down over top of us, right there.
There is the Hurricane Landfall Project truck. It's all set up, strapped down. We're going to turn all the switches on in just a little while. Standing outside of the Chevy Tahoe, we are getting into the eye wall of Hurricane Jean right now. Four came in on shore here along the southeast coast of Florida.
These little bullet cams right here that we will use to record that surge.
Hello again, and welcome to another edition of Stories from the Hurricane Highway. I am your host, Mark Suddeth. Not only is it another edition, it's the start of a brand new season of our podcast series here. This is the fifth season of Stories from the Hurricane Highway, so it's great to have you along with me. Very excited about what we have ahead in this season. We are going to take a look back together, myself, you, and several guests over the coming months. We're going to start with the very end of 2012, a little recap, and then we're going to go through 2013, which I'm going to tell you right now was like a big nothing burger for the most part, and then 2014, 2015, 2016, and we will culminate with a very exciting and impactful and important 2017, and so that'll be what we cover over the many episodes upcoming of our podcast here. So yeah, buckle in, get the old earbuds ready to go, and take a listen as I walk you through. And we go back down the memory lane here, literally, of our Hurricane Highway. So where do we start? Well, I thought, 2012, that was a big year, pivotal, lots of stuff happening. We had our app that launched that year. I was thinking about this the other night. My version of show prep, when I lay down and my head hits the pillow, the wheels are always turning. And I think about things, and the other night I was thinking about how to start season five off, and I figured, let's just look back real quick at 2012. It was an important year. We had our app that started, Hurricane Impact. It was only on iOS or iPhone devices. It would work on an iPad, but it wasn't developed specifically for iPad. I was still working with Kitty Code and my friend Eileen Jones with her app, Hurricane, Hurricane Pro, Hurricane HD. I had a strong relationship with CNN. It was not a paid relationship, but they helped me out with exposure and some of the expenses and things like that. And Sandy, of course, Hurricane Sandy was the big event hurricane-wise of 2012. I'll recap that in just a moment when we look back at the 2012 hurricane season as a whole. Just kind of setting the stage for what would come in 2013, basically. Of course, we had the Herbie project. That was really big for us, the Hurricane Research Balloon project that Carrie and I and others helped to develop, and we tested it with my good friend Greg Nordstrom and a longtime friend of mine that I've known through Storm 2K, David Van Bergen. He came out to help on that very first launch in late May 2012 in a Texas field, and it worked, zero engineering and anything like that, just trial and error, and it actually worked. We got that thing up over 90,000 feet. We recovered it, and we got some great GoPro video, and it was the start, the very start of that project that still, in terms of a daytime landfall, all these years later, it eludes us to get Herbie into the eye of a hurricane in the daytime. We did it once, and if you don't know that story, that's okay. It's already out there on my 2017 Tracking the Hurricanes that I did. That's the documentary series. It's on YouTube and Amazon Prime, I believe, or Amazon Video, whatever they call it. We did launch Herbie, a different version of it. It's gotten smaller and more sophisticated over the years, but we did launch that in 2017 in the eye of Hurricane Nate, but it was at like midnight or whatever, 1 o'clock in the morning, something like that. It worked. We did it. It counts. But we didn't really see anything. We'll talk about that later. That's way on the other side of the podcast series here of season five. I'll probably start talking about that in April or May. Anyway, Herbie started in 2012. So that was huge. We just kept doing what we do. The world of blogging. That's right. I started WordPress in 2012. That was Eileen's suggestion. And other people had suggested it too, that we get away from a manual way of updating the website. It was just all code, HTML code, literally by hand, and you know, start using WordPress, which of course has its own benefits, but it also had some problems with security, especially with plugins and whatnot. We'll talk about that as we go forward. But I was doing WordPress on the site, so it made it look more like a news site would look, and so forth. And 2012 was generally a pretty big year, you know, very successful overall. The Sandy situation up in New Jersey for me, and then of course it impacted a lot of people along the East Coast and the Northeast. That was the benchmark storm of 2012. So I figured, let's just look back here at the Wikipedia site at what 2012 did in terms of numbers and so forth. And as I was reading back through this myself, a little bit more show prep, I don't have everything memorized, right? You know, some people can. I don't have it all. I'm pretty good, but I don't have the little tiny details. Some I do, some I don't. Anyway, I didn't realize that the 2012 season is the fifth costliest season. It's in the top five for damage at over $72 billion in 2012 dollars, right? The fifth costliest tropical cyclone season on record. And of course, Sandy was the strongest that year. And I say only here, getting ready to do that with air quotes, only clocking in at 115 miles per hour. That's really interesting because in the years since, especially the last several years, you know, which we'll start picking up on in season six, we're going to finally get up to modern times in 2025. Yeah, we're getting there. And then this thing will be current, and that's what's going to be really exciting. I mean, I can't wait for that, but we got to get there. But, you know, kind of flash forwarding ahead a little bit here, Sandy was the strongest in 2012, a big impact season from because of Sandy, and certainly Isaac 2012. We don't want to forget Isaac. But, you know, you hear 115, that's impactful, that's strong. But you think about 2018, we had Michael, Cat 5, 160. In 2023, you know, the year that I'm putting this podcast episode together, we had Lee. It did not make landfall as a Cat 5, but it made it to Cat 5. We've had a lot of Category 5s these last several years. But in 2012, I just found it interesting that the biggest event of the year was at one point, quote, only a Category 3 at 115, and that was down in the Caribbean. Of course, it made landfall as a transitioning post-tropical cyclone, as they started calling them, at 70, 80, 90 miles per hour, whatever it was, 75, I don't remember specifically. It doesn't matter. The damage was mainly from surge and some wind damage. We all know the story. But yeah, that was 2012, and we ended up with 19 total named storms, of which a high percentage became hurricanes, 10, but only two major hurricanes. So a pretty big year, fifth costliest on record. We only had two major hurricanes, and Sandy made up a bulk of the damage. So it just goes to show you how these things work, you know, that you don't have to have these cataclysmic, intense hurricanes to cause cataclysmic or catastrophic, a better way to put it, damage. And certainly Sandy did that. And Isaac did, of course, down on the Gulf Coast. For me, as I talked about in a prior episode, Isaac was very stressful. That was right when the app had come out, and it was just so hard to focus because there was bugs and problems, and, you know, Isaac was a slow lumbering system. It was hard to predict, hard to figure out where to put our remote cams, and so forth, right? And then the other big thing, getting away from hurricane season a little bit, was along the Weather Balloon Project line of thought here, I got invited by CNN, specifically CNN International, to do sort of a piggyback project with them over the summer of 2012. Carrie and I worked on that to help them with what they call a fluff piece. You know, it's just something they do, and it's a nice, cute little piece that helps to train some of the correspondents, photographers. You know, it's just part of their system. And they had this whole group of international students. It was kind of like their summer project. And they wanted a nice fluff piece, so they were covering this idea of high-altitude weather ballooning as a hobby. And I guess the guy that got in touch with me, his name was Chris, found out about what we were doing at Hurricane Track, tracked me down, and the rest, as they say, is history, right? So we went and worked with the CNN team over in Peachtree City, as you might recall. We launched a little bit after dawn, and the Weather Service had their regular sounding balloon. We had our Jaeger, that's what CNN called it, trying to piggyback off the whole Chuck Yeager thing. And it was too heavy, and we had the string too short, or the it's not really a string, it's not a rope either. What would you call it? It's just the cord, is a better way to put it. It was too short, and we learned about this later. We'll get to this. And we encountered high-altitude winds way up at, it was like 66,000 feet or something like that, and the balloon separated. Everything came apart, and it crashed back to Earth, way short of the 100,000 feet that we wanted. And we looked for it that afternoon, and in the rural areas around Peachtree City and vicinity, Griffin, Georgia, that area. Coincidentally, it's where they filmed The Walking Dead, which was in its heyday back then. So, you know, some of these parts were falling back down near set areas and, you know, different areas where they had shot episodes of The Walking Dead. I thought that was interesting. But we never found during the launch period and the recovery period the actual payload. We found pieces. We found the spot locator. That's the satellite tracker. We found the parachute and a big chunk of balloon and some of the sticks that we use, these frames, these wood dowels. And it was basically like, you know, a failure, right? The CNN people are like, well, that didn't work. We don't have the GoPros. There is no conclusion to the story, so to speak. And Carrie and I were just like, well, this is terrible. And we did have the APRS tracker. It was a larger device than we have now. And we had a general idea of where everything was. And we had a phone in there. Remember that? We had this HTC. That's the company that made it. It was the G1, the Google G1. Paul had given it to us. And it had a little app in there that would phone home when the phone is turned on or powered on or something like that. It had like a phone home, like it would text Paul. Now we have Life 360 and we have all kinds of tracking. We have AirTags from Apple and whatever. But we found the phone was in this guy's yard near Griffin, Georgia, and we all went over there and talked to him. Even the local sheriff helped us out just to keep everything, you know, cool and legitimate and whatnot. And we looked and looked and looked in the woods, and we heard the APRS squawking, talking to Carrie's radio, but we didn't find the payload, the actual styrofoam box, or what was left of it, that would have had these GoPros during that particular shot at everything, that launch day. I don't remember the exact day that it was. Actually, let me go over here because it is on a blog that I did called The Importance of Finding Jaeger. I published this on December 21st, 2012. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to remember to put a link to this. This is over on the Wayback Machine, or the Web Archive as it's called. And they archived it. I mean, it's all right here just like I wrote it up. Let's see if I have the date that I did this here. Looking through here, mid-June is what it says that Chris contacted. June 23rd. Yep, so exactly 1 month after we tested Herbie in Texas, it was on June 23rd that we did this launch. So we, all of us, the CNN people, Carrie and me, and then the family that the phone landed in their yard, we had some explaining to do about that, right? We all looked for it. We were very close. The APRS would tell you, you know, you're a half a mile, you're, you know, quarter mile, whatever the case was. We just didn't find it. And it was hot, snakes, you know, spiders, everything you can imagine out there in the thick Georgia woods. And so we gave up that day. That was the 23rd. Carrie and I decided to come back a week later and try again. We worked with this family that was there in Griffin, and we looked all around the river that went through there. It's called the Flint River. No dice. You know, we, you know, spent like the whole day looking for it about a week later, and I gave up and said, all right, I think what we'll do is we will wait until the winter, and once the leaves fall after the first, well, not necessarily the first freeze, but that'll certainly help. But once we get into, say, December, you know, the deciduous trees will lose most of their leaves, the leaf canopy will drop, and we should be able to find this thing because we had APRS information, which is, you know, the automatic packet reporting system from ham radio, right? And it tells you the latitude and longitude several decimal places out. And you just got to go there and see if you find it. It's like a geocache, really, that fell from the sky. So that's what Carrie and I did, and we went back in December of 2012, and lo and behold, it didn't even take an hour, and we found it. And we took it to CNN the next day, to Chris, and they actually did an interview, and we did a piece, and it wound up on CNN.com. I think they had a section of CNN called Light Years. It was like a tech area of CNN.com, and they ran a story there with some great video. We understood why it broke up, you know, what happened, and we see that often with SpaceX and how they launch things, and they have failures, and they learn quickly, and they get right back up. Similar to what we're doing, except it's not costing billions of dollars, and we don't use rocket fuel and all that stuff, right? But it's the same general idea. We had never done this before, and we're learning as we go, and that video from Yeager, again, as CNN wanted to call it, was very helpful in understanding what happened. But it took a couple more years for us to actually put that understanding to use. We'll get there. We'll talk about that later on. But at least we got to see, oh, it separated because of very high altitude, very high, let's rephrase that, very strong high altitude winds were pushing the payload in front of the balloon. And then it would go up like a swing, like a child on a swing set. And you get that zero G for just a second, probably a half second, right? And then the kid falls back. I'd do it even now at the age of 53. It's fun. So that's what the payload was doing. Because of these strong high-altitude winds, the payload would outrun the balloon and then fall back and then jerk right on the neck of the balloon. And it separated everything. The cooler, it was a styrofoam cooler layered with Gorilla Tape, there was just too much force, and everything ripped apart. And because of the multiple cameras that we had, we got to see everything. But it still didn't explain why. Like, why did this happen? Why did the high-altitude strong winds cause this? And so it would be a few years later, honestly, because we weren't testing it too much. I think we took 2013 off to skip ahead a little bit. And we tested again in 2014. And we'll get to that in a future episode. So we learned a lot from Herbie. It was a heck of an adventure. And it wrapped up 2012. Kind of on a high note. It really did. It was kind of exciting to come out of there victorious. We found the payload. We got the GoPro chips back. And we got to see what happened. Got some playtime, so to speak, on CNN.com. And it was just kind of cool, you know, honestly. So the way everything ended, it kind of literally reminds me of the season finale of a show that we watch, a streaming show these days, or, you know, something on network TV from yesteryear. I don't watch network TV anymore. I don't have cable. I just have fast internet and I watch everything streaming. But you know how that works? At the end of a show, a season finale, there will be some kind of a reveal, a cliffhanger, and whatever, you know, like a pivotal moment. Oh, now you got to wait until the next season to see what happens, right? And so that kind of happened in real life with me and my project, the whole hurricane tracking, everything that we were doing took a dramatic and really important turn for the positive at the end of 2012, right when we were finishing up this whole Yeager thing in Georgia in December. Something really important was going to happen, and we'll get to that after this little quick musical interlude. Thank you. All right, we're back now after that nice little musical break. By the way, those little music breaks that we do between the segments, if you didn't know this, I produce those on synthesizer, keyboard, whatever you want to call it, sometimes Apple's GarageBand, with a Bluetooth keyboard or a MIDI keyboard, Musical Instruments Digital Interface, MIDI. If you know electronic music, you know what I'm talking about. And I have a lot of fun with those, putting those little snippets together. Some of them end up as background music in my Hurricane Highway series. Sometimes it might be a piece that I used as a full theme or whatever, and I drop it in as these breaks. So a little trivia for you in case you didn't know that. Now you do. All right, so back to the topic at hand. We are wrapping up 2012. We got something big that's going to happen, a course change, as they say, because we kind of needed it. So let's go back to Sandy again and the boxes, the storm cases, right? These big, like Foot Locker size Pelican cases. They were literally called Storm Case. That was the brand name. And Pelican ended up buying them. It was Hardig Corporation that the Storm Case was from. So it was called the Storm Case. And still is, but Pelican owns them now. But that's neither here nor there. So they were pretty big. And we had this giant battery, you know, like 105 amp hour lead acid battery or AGM battery sealed, right? So they could tip over and you're not going to spill acid everywhere. It's all sealed up, AGM. Weighed the whole thing, you know, 70, 80 pounds. You had a big laptop in there to digitize the video that was coming in from these bullet cams. And yes, we still had the VCR. Even in 2012, the VCR was in that box to record onto SVHS tape to get the best quality video possible. And very important, no audio on the remote cams through 2012. The Tahoe cam had audio because that was a video camera fed into the laptop, the Sony Vaio, through a FireWire cable, and so it had audio. That was different. And, of course, we were streaming now on Ustream, U-S-T-R-E-A-M, not YouTube. It was very difficult to stream on YouTube back then, so we were using Ustream. And it was a pretty popular social media streaming platform, gaining ground. A lot of people used it for various things, right? So, Sandy, we lost a couple of the boxes in that big surge. Stuff was just too close to the water, so forth and so on. And found one, a family found it in their yard, and the kid was like, yeah, I saw it. And I was like, hey, he saw me walking around looking for it, and they figured that must be the guy, because I had parked my Tahoe nearby, and everybody recognized that. I think I put that in the Sandy episode, if I'm not mistaken, from last season. But anyway, it was time to, like, you know, I even told Carrie this. Like, it's time that we come up with a better way to do this remote box thing, because it's too big, they're too bulky. Technology has got to be at a better place now. So that's the setup, right? That's where we are at this point. So now we're in December. We're done with this Jaeger thing. Very successful into it. CNN was happy a few months later, but they were happy. They got their fluff piece after all. Carrie and I went to Ruth's Chris to celebrate in downtown Atlanta. I do remember that, after we went to the CNN Center and went over all the video and helped them with their piece and whatnot. And we finished up, went back to Noonan, Georgia, where our hotel was, the Hampton Inn. And we're sitting in Carrie's truck, and he's like, I got something for you, an early Christmas present. I was like, oh, yeah? And he handed me a Verizon bag, like he had been to the Verizon store. It's got that very recognizable V on there, you know the logo. And inside was a mobile hotspot from Verizon. And it was a prepaid 5510L, I think is the model number or whatever. You know, it's about 4 inches, if that, wide, couple inches thick, or across, whatever, an inch thick. Little black and red oval-shaped deal. 1,500, maybe 2,200 milliamp hour battery. You know, it's a mobile hotspot. I'd heard of them, but, you know, never had one. And he's like, yeah, I got a mobile hotspot. They sell them at Radio Shack, or the Verizon store is where he got his. But Radio Shack, you remember Radio Shack? They were still in business back then. you could get them there, and you pay whatever it was, $50 for 10 gigabytes or something. I don't remember. Maybe it might have been $100. It was expensive, but we just wanted to test and see if this was going to work. Work with what? You know, like, I've already got either Sprint with my Sprint Air cards, or we have Carrie's Verizon Air card that you plug into your laptop, but that's the problem. Those are connected to your laptop. You needed a mobile Wi-Fi hotspot, and that's what this Verizon device would do. Then he handed me the next bag, and it was from Best Buy or something, and it was a Logitech Broadcaster Wi-Fi webcam. Totally wireless, USB powered. I say wireless, it's, you know, you don't have to plug it into an internet source. It's a Wi-Fi cam from Logitech. They had teamed up with Ustream. So once you pair it through the Logitech Broadcaster app on an iOS device, my iPhone, it would go to my Ustream account. And we were like, wow, this could really be cool. He had researched it. He had known after Sandy, you know, we talked about it. Like, look, we got to come up with something better. These boxes are too big, too bulky. It's 4:3, like the aspect ratio. It doesn't look good. Like, there's got to be better. So he brought to me what he thought would be better. Let's give it a try. Let's give it a shot, right? So that's exactly what we did. We got everything paired up, the broadcaster synchronized with the Verizon hotspot, and we were ready to go. It was like late at night in the hotel parking lot of the Hampton Inn there in Noonan, Georgia. A couple dudes sitting in the truck, Carrie's truck, you know, playing with technology, you know, a couple of kids on Christmas Day. That's what it felt like. And I think we might have mentioned something about it on the C-Box chat. You know, hey, we're getting ready to test something. This could be a game changer. Wish us luck. Carrie was able to pull the feed up in the Ustream app on his iPhone, on my account. Because you remember, Ustream was a social media company. I think they sold all their stuff to IBM in recent years, several years ago now. But, you know, it was a big deal, and they were partnering with Logitech. I mean, my mouse right here, that mouse, that's a Logitech mouse. Everybody knows Logitech. So it looked like it was going to work. And then there was this, I remember there was this button on the top of the broadcaster that you press that button, and it goes green, this bright green color, kind of like an LED or whatever. And you were live. That meant it was going. And so we did that, and it was working. It had audio. That was going to be a huge feature. You know, none of the remote cams from 05 on, you know, all the way to 2012, none of them had audio. They just didn't. The only audio was from the Tahoe cam, because that was a video camera. And it just looked like, hey, we got a new thing here, you know. And we drove around the parking lot a couple laps and held the camera out the window, you know, realized, oh, wow, this could be really cool for, like, walking around, showing people stuff. We could get a couple of these, you know, certainly put them in a box and have a remote version. There was certainly a lot of potential. It was a very exciting moment, you know, and the end of an era of the old, big, bulky, first-generation camera system and the beginning of this new era of using a Wi-Fi cam. And really the only thing we needed to do was figure out how to power it, like I said. But other than that, it looked very, very promising as we would get into 2013. So that pretty much wrapped up 2012. We powered it down and we're congratulating each other. Like, all right, this is it. This is the defining moment. Everything changes here. You know, everything's going to be smaller, and we got to test it, obviously, and we're going to be ready. We're going to be ready for 2013. So it was a great way to wrap up a pretty eventful 2012, I'd say. And I went back to North Carolina the next day, and he went on back to Houston, and we wrapped up 2012. Wasn't there supposed to be something bad that was going to happen after 2012, in December of 2012? I think they even made a movie about it, but clearly that never happened. But anyway, that was it. Yeah, that was a fitting way to wrap up such an eventful year with all the innovation that we had with Herbie, the success there. We, you know, finding the CNN balloon debris and, you know, getting that GoPro video back and dealing with Sandy. And just, it was a big year. It really, really was. And that carried a lot of momentum. It always helps to have a big ending to a year. Then you carry that momentum forward into the next year. So I think that's a good place to stop for this episode. Next episode, we will get into 2013. I'm hoping to be able to get my friend Phil Klotzbach to come on with me as well. Spoiler alert, 2013 was kind of uneventful. Overall, the hurricane season was certainly a dud. Very aggressive forecast early, and then it fell well short of those expectations. And I'm going to reach out to Phil and see if he can join us to kind of look back at that ill-fated season, that the season of forecast was just a disaster, some of the reasons why. But yeah, we'll get into 2013, and then of course, we just roll from there. Once we get to 2014 and beyond, all sorts of amazing, magical, innovative, cool things happened. We eventually branched out beyond just covering hurricanes, and just a lot of amazing stuff to talk about and for me to tell you, and hopefully have some people on to help tell these stories with me as we get into the fifth season here of Stories from the Hurricane Highway. So, as always, thanks for tuning in and giving it a listen. I do appreciate it. I appreciate your feedback as well. Some of you who I've met in person, it's nice to hear how you tell me about, you know, some of the things you listened to in these episodes, the details. It shows me that you were paying attention. It was like, wow, you remembered that from an episode. So that's really cool. I appreciate that too. Very, very nice. All right. So as always, again, thank you for tuning in. I am Mark Suddeth, the host of Stories from the Hurricane Highway. Great to be back here on Season 5. We'll pick it up again, starting with 2013 in earnest, on the next edition of Stories from the Hurricane Highway coming up soon.